The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening. For the last few weeks, I've been talking about the Eightfold Path, the Noble Eightfold Path, which can be divided into what the Buddha called the gradual training, which is a training that begins with a cultivation of ethical conduct and then moves into a cultivation of mental training, training of meditation, and results in the cultivation and development of wisdom, of understanding, of insight. And so last couple weeks I've talked about the aspect of this gradual training in terms of cultivating our minds and our hearts. I talked about the ethical training. And so today I'm going to move into the aspect of the meditative, the mental cultivation, the cultivating our minds and our hearts, actually, in the tradition of understanding how the mental qualities work. The Buddhist tradition, they typically think of mind and heart as actually being one thing. There's not a separation between mind and heart. So we're cultivating our hearts as well. So the aspect of cultivating this, the cultivating our minds, cultivating the mental training, is the aspect of the Eightfold Path that contains three qualities or three factors. There's the factor of wise effort, the factor of wise mindfulness, and the factor of wise concentration. And these three pieces really work together to support our mental and heartfelt growth. We can't really think of them separately, although I'm going to talk about them separately. They work together. So it's not as though we first cultivate effort and then cultivate mindfulness and then concentration results. They all kind of work together. So keep that in mind while I'm talking about wise effort. So the aspect of the ethical qualities, cultivating the ethical qualities of the heart, is really about getting our outer world, our relationships into harmony. And when we move into the training of the mind, we're looking at getting our inner world into harmony. So we're moving in the direction of more subtlety, in fact, that the looking at our behavior is the kind of the obvious impact of how our the training of our hearts and minds. First, we need to work towards making our relationships harmonious, and with that support, we can then move into settling and harmonizing our heart. So as we train in the ethical aspects of wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, we start to see that it does take effort to move in the direction of harmony. And this aspect of effort is really primarily around looking at what supports our moving towards freedom from suffering? What supports our moving away from the ways we get caught? So that's primarily what the aspect of wise effort is about, is looking at how we get caught and how we can learn how to let go of being caught, how we can cultivate things that move us in the direction we want to go. So there's another quality of mind that's very close to the factor of wise effort, and that is a factor called energy. I'm going to talk a little bit about energy and how it relates to effort. So these two are often conflated. They're often confused, the notions of energy and effort. So I'm hoping to clarify and distinguish them a little bit. So I'm going to start first by talking a little bit about energy. So energy is the kind of neutral quality of mind that just underlies action. It's not particularly wholesome or unwholesome. It's actually a neutral quality. It takes on the flavor of what it is we are directing our energy towards. So energy can be directed towards a greed and aversion. It can be directed towards ambition or lust. So that energy can be directed in ways that kind of move us back into the realm of suffering. Or the energy can be directed towards cultivating qualities of peace, of mindfulness, of compassion, of kindness. So in terms of the practice, in terms of opening our hearts, the quality of energy needs to be joined with some understanding of what direction we want to move. So there needs to be a connection of energy with a kind of a wisdom. In one of the lists, actually, this factor of energy is in quite a few of the lists that the Buddha created. Some of you might know that the Buddha was a great list maker. I think it was partly because lists were easy to memorize. And this quality of energy was in quite a number of lists. And there's one list that it was in, a kind of a long list of the qualities of the paramis, which I talked about last fall. And the quality that precedes energy in the list of the paramis is wisdom. And I think this really indicates how important it is for wisdom to guide energy. So one definition, there's several definitions of wisdom, and one definition of wisdom is this very simple, basic understanding of what is it that supports moving away from suffering. Things that are unskillful, that lead us towards suffering, the understanding the distinction between what's unskillful, the things that lead us towards suffering, and what is skillful, what leads us away from suffering. That is one definition of wisdom. That if we act wisely, we act in ways that lead us towards happiness, away from suffering. Another definition of wisdom has to do with understanding the Four Noble Truths, understanding what leads to suffering, understanding how to let go of the causes of suffering, realizing the cessation of suffering, and cultivating those qualities that lead us to the ending of suffering. So with respect to energy and effort, there's a very interesting kind of two-way connection between them. That this energy, when it is imbued with wisdom, when it has this understanding of what's skillful and unskillful, is the mental quality that allows wise effort to unfold. And, perhaps more surprisingly, the quality of energy that allows our practice to move forward because the energy is kind of the whole way our practice, our cultivation of heart and mind moves. That the effort to cultivate these wholesome qualities and let go of unwholesome qualities itself, the effort itself results in energy. That's a little bit backwards from the way we normally think about it. We normally think that in order to make effort, in order to turn an engine, to have effort made, we need energy. And that making effort uses up energy. But what happens here is that, yes, there is some energy needed in order to make effort. And that effort in turn produces energy. And the more that we engage in this kind of wise effort, the more effortless it becomes. So, the main definition of wise effort has four aspects to it. And it basically takes as a foundation an understanding of what is skillful and what is unskillful with respect to what leads us to suffering. What is it that pulls us into suffering? What is it that moves us away from suffering? That understanding of what is skillful and unskillful is kind of the foundation of wise effort. So what does it mean? What is unskillful? Unskillful actions, unskillful mind states, are those mind states that are basically rooted in greed, aversion, and delusion. They are the mind states that pull us into our habits and patterns and get us hooked onto our cycles of anger, aversion, irritation, annoyance, frustration, avarice, conceit. All these things that tend to create problems in our lives. Wholesome qualities of mind, wholesome states, are those that are based in non-aversion, non-greed, non-delusion. And these tend to be qualities like kindness, compassion, calm, equanimity, mindfulness, generosity. These are the qualities that support our heart opening, connecting to things as they are. So taking this understanding of what's skillful and what's unskillful, what's wholesome, what's unwholesome, I'll use those terms kind of synonymously, interchangeably. The factor of wise effort in the Eightfold Path basically has four aspects to it. And I'll just read these four out. I'll state these four. There is the effort to avoid unwholesome states that have not arisen. There's the effort to abandon unwholesome states that have arisen. There's the effort to arouse wholesome states that have not arisen. And the effort to cultivate or maintain wholesome states that have arisen. So that sounds pretty complicated, probably. So I'll go through each of these one by one and talk a little bit about what it means, how we engage with these as practices. How do we work with these in our meditation, in our lives? Because these practices really begin to connect us to our experience in a very different way. They begin to connect us to our experience in a way of just meeting it rather than being so reactive to it. So the first one, this effort to avoid unwholesome states that have not arisen. So this basically is about looking at what happens to us understanding the causes and conditions that lead us into unwholesome states, that lead us into states of anger, aversion, conceit, pride, irritation, annoyance. What are the conditions that lead us there? And then can we avoid going in that direction? So it's about understanding the conditions that lead us towards unskillful mind states and seeing if we can avoid that direction. Now it's really, really important in this avoiding aspect not to avoid out of aversion, because that will simply be cultivating aversion. So this avoidance has to be skillful in and of itself. So it's a little bit of a conundrum there. It's looking at, for instance, I'll give an example. This avoiding can kind of have a more subtle meaning to it. So suppose, for instance, you find that whenever you meet a particular person, you get agitated. So there's a pretty clear connection. You meet that person and you get agitated. So at a simple level, you might think, well, this teaching means I'm supposed to avoid seeing that person. That would be the easy way to avoid the agitation. But that's actually probably a kind of a more gross way of looking at the avoidance. Another way to engage with this teaching is not necessarily to avoid the person, but to engage with looking at what happens in the mind as this agitation arises, so that you become more cognizant of more subtle causes for the agitation. So there's the obvious cause of this person being with this person causing some agitation, but as you observe the agitation itself, if you can just meet the agitation, you might start to see some more subtle causes in your mind. Some beliefs around needing security or protection, perhaps. Just coming up with something that comes into the top of my mind. So looking at what are the more subtle causes. So engaging with this teaching doesn't necessarily mean just, kind of trying to cut out of your life all the things that lead to unwholesome states of mind, but more, it's more about looking at these processes in our mind by which these states are created. Agitation is created, the irritation is created. It's really beginning to understand the causes, an investigation of the causes. And as we investigate the causes, often we see that the causes begin to loosen. And then there is the true avoidance of these unwholesome states. Another way to engage with this teaching is, it's sometimes called sense restraint. And again, this has a sense or a sound of like blocking your senses, not looking at things that cause agitation or cause wanting, or not listening to things that create irritation or annoyance. But the understanding of sense restraint, sometimes also called guarding the sense doors, is that we look at our experience with mindfulness. We guard the senses with mindfulness. That mindfulness is the protection. So that when we look at something, there's a process that happens as we engage in the world. When we meet our sense experience, we see something. It's pleasant or unpleasant. We like it or we don't like it. And out of that forms some kind of reactivity. So if we're not practicing this a mindful attention to our sense world, we'll find ourselves just getting spun out all the time. We'll find ourselves, you know, leaping onto this and that and the other thing that we like and don't like, and find ourselves just yanked around by our habits and patterns of liking and not liking and greed and aversion. So this practice is talking about, can we be mindful? Can we be mindful of this process of our sense interaction? We see something. We know what it is. We recognize it. We recognize that there's pleasant or unpleasant around it. It's possible in this exploration of guarding the senses, of exploring mindfulness, to just simply notice that pleasant or unpleasant is there. Maybe notice that liking or not liking comes in. With the mindfulness, it's possible that that pattern of reactivity won't follow on. If the mindfulness is pretty steady, you'll just simply notice, oh yeah, there's that thing, I like that. Oh, there's that thing, I don't like that. And it doesn't tend to move so much into the, oh, I've got to have that. How can I figure out how to get that? Or I got to get rid of that. It's just not appropriate. Either I got to get out of here or that thing's got to get out of here. We can short circuit that whole process through mindfulness. That is a way of avoiding the arising of unwholesome states through mindfulness. Just this bringing our attention to what is happening. So the second kind of right effort is the effort to abandon unwholesome states that have arisen. Now this one is really about, we notice when we're caught in difficult patterns, we notice when we're caught in some unwholesome, unskillful mind state, and we make the effort to let go of it. So this letting go of unskillful, difficult mind states, anger arises. Sometimes we can this letting go can have an active quality. We can reflect on this state, this anger, and realize it's not so helpful, and turn our attention to something else, that it just kind of lets go, because we recognize essentially the drawbacks of that state. So there can be a kind of an active letting go. We can see, wow, this is just not helpful. And it feels like there's an active letting go of that tendency in the mind. So there's a few techniques for letting go of unwholesome mind states that have this active kind of quality. One is if you notice that you're in some kind of a state, like anger, for instance. That one is one I have a lot of experience working with. If you notice you're in that kind of a state and you're caught by it, you can try simply replacing the thoughts that surround it by more wholesome thoughts, by more positive thoughts. You might, for instance, if you are angry at somebody, try turning the attention towards kindness, actively replacing the thoughts. This is actually something that the Buddha taught. It sounds like something more New Agey, but it is something the Buddha actually taught, this replacing of thoughts. Another way to work with difficult mind states, and this is one that I find particularly useful if I'm really caught by something, and the mindfulness, if I try to turn towards it with mindfulness, I just find that the awareness gets lost. I cannot be mindful of this state because the state is kind of overwhelming. If you find you're overwhelmed by some kind of a difficult state, depression or sadness or grief or anger, if it feels overwhelming to you, turn your attention to something else. So it's like skillful distraction. Let yourself distract yourself, but do it mindfully. It's not so helpful to distract yourself mindlessly, to distract yourself by turning on the television or the radio, or you know, to just kind of try to zone out to avoid that state of mind. Because if that's what's going on, if you're just zoning out and not being mindful, that pattern, that habit that's kind of churning, that strong momentum, is likely to just keep churning in your spaced outness. So if you can redirect the attention to something, kind of do an ignoring or a not now, turn your attention away from that difficult state, the thoughts around it, and just put your attention somewhere else. Mindfully attend to something else in your experience. This has been very helpful for me in times when I've been really caught in something, to just recognize, yep, there's that thing, I see it, there's that anger. And I also know from experience, from trying to bring awareness to it, that it's not a good time to do that. My mind isn't strong enough. The mindfulness isn't strong enough to meet that quality. So I'm going to turn my attention to something really neutral, my feet on the ground, sensations of my hands, the experience of hearing. Just redirect the attention. If there's something really challenging going on, redirecting the attention. So it's a kind of a dropping of the attention towards that difficult state. That allows a kind of letting go. You're letting go of the attention towards it, actively turning your attention somewhere else. It supports a letting go of that difficult state of mind. And this letting go can also have a more passive quality, or kind of a more natural quality, that it's not something you do so much as something that you allow to happen. And this is the way that mindfulness works, actually. That if we turn our attention to difficult mind states, turn our mindful attention to anger, grief, loneliness, frustration, turn our mindful attention to that, letting go of thoughts around it, just being willing to meet the experience. That's a radical shift from the way we normally engage in our experience. Normally we are tied into our emotional states. We're thinking about them. We are kind of feeding them with our thoughts. Our thoughts actually create these feelings in a way. If we can turn to just the experience rather than the thoughts around the experience, just meet what the experience is without trying to push it away, without trying to stop it, and yet without engaging in it, without continuing the cycle of thought around it. When we can meet experience like that, it's kind of like putting the whole system into neutral. If you think about kind of the way momentum works, you know, if you're driving on the freeway, you've got a momentum of the car, you know, moving forward. When you put the car into neutral, the car keeps moving. And yet there's no longer that impetus to keep it going. So you know that at some point the car will come to a stop because you've put it into neutral. And that's what we do with our minds when we bring mindfulness to our difficult states. It's like we're putting our mind into neutral. And that allows this experience of anger, of grief, of loneliness to come to a natural cessation. It will come to a cessation because it is like all things. It is impermanent. It has an end. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if we are no longer feeding it, it will come to a stop. And then it's likely that some hours, minutes, days, weeks, whatever, later, something very similar will come back, a very similar pattern, because these patterns themselves are kind of ingrained in our minds. So it's not just once that we have to do this, letting go and putting into neutral. When we put it into a neutral, when we put our minds into neutral, the pattern that's in effect right now will come to a stop. But the ingrained bits in the mind are still there. So you have to work with it many times, letting go, putting it into neutral many, many times. And slowly over time, that putting the mind into neutral begins to somehow decondition that pattern. Slowly, slowly, it deconditions that particular pattern. So this is kind of about letting it be. Let it be. Let whatever it is be. Not engaging, not pushing away, not trying to stop, not trying to fix, not trying to change, and yet not engaging either. This putting into neutral. This is a lot of where our practice comes. This is a huge part of our practice. When we can learn this kind of skill of putting our minds into neutral, the practice actually gets much easier. And it is a skill. It's something it's something we need to learn, how this works. It's like we bumble around a little bit, trying to be mindful of our experience, and at the same time we realize we're still really caught in it, and we see that there's still all these thoughts going around this pattern. And at some point in this process of trying to be mindful, something shifts, and we understand for a few moments what it means to put the mind into neutral and just let this pattern run. There's a definite shift that happens. It's a feeling. It feels very different. In that shift into neutral, somehow that thing, that state of mind, is no longer a problem. It's no longer a problem. It's there. It's seen. It's still going. But it's no longer a problem. It's just something that's happening. It's like a flower growing or a weed growing. You're just watching this thing happen. And it's not a problem because we're no longer caught by it. So this putting into neutral is like taking the gears. It takes the gears out so that we're no longer stuck in the pattern. And the pattern can just wind itself out. So that's a big part, a big way that we engage in our practice. The third kind of right effort brings us to the wholesome qualities, the side of cultivating, arousing these wholesome qualities of mind. So the third kind is the effort to arouse wholesome states of mind that have not yet arisen. So in order to cultivate wholesome states that are not currently present. Part of this is connected to what I talked about the last couple weeks around ethical conduct. Because one of the ways to support the arising of wholesome states that are not yet here for us is to behave in ways that are opposed to unwholesome states. So we abstain from situations. We abstain from situations that oppose these wholesome qualities of mind. So, for instance, if we want to cultivate truthfulness, we can abstain from lying. We can cultivate compassion through refraining from harming other beings. We cultivate honesty and contentment through refraining from taking what's not given. So the quality, the work in the ethical aspect of the path is really an area of supporting this nurturing of wholesome states that have not yet arisen. We can also work towards cultivating wholesome mind states through active practices around specific wholesome mind states. For instance, if you're interested in cultivating the quality of kindness, you can practice the practice of metta, of cultivating loving kindness, which is a very active practice of consciously using thought to direct well-wishing towards other beings. So you bring people into your mind and express the wish, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be safe, may you live with ease. That is a way of inclining the mind, inclining the heart towards the quality of kindness, this practice of metta. Or you can cultivate generosity through a practice of giving. That you, if you are working towards becoming more generous, one way to do that is to actively engage in giving. Whether or not you're feeling generous, to engage in a practice, to make it a practice. We also cultivate mindfulness as we engage in all of these qualities of wise effort. We cultivate the ability to recognize what's happening in the moment. One of my teachers, one of my Burmese teachers, Sayadaw Upandita, says mindfulness is the most wholesome mind state. So any time that you are bringing your attention to your experience, trying to meet your experience with mindfulness, you are cultivating the quality of mindfulness. The fourth kind of right effort is the effort to sustain wholesome states that have already arisen. So this one might sound a little odd. I mean, why would it need effort to sustain beautiful qualities of mind? Why would it need effort to sustain joy and peace and happiness and contentment? Surprisingly, I have found in my own mind that it does take effort to allow these to cultivate these, to encourage them to continue. The patterns, the habits of our mind are so strong that even when these qualities are present, those habits and patterns are likely to come in and, you know, take us on a left turn to some other place. I'll give an example of this. I've given this example before. On one retreat, I was really starting to settle in and feel a lot of calm, a lot of peace in my meditation. just able to be with the experience. A lot of calm. And in that place of calm, the mind would kind of connect with it for a little while. It's like, oh, yeah, there's calm. That's nice. Now, this is a perfect time to pay attention to that pain in my back. So that rather than resting with the calm and just maintaining that quality of real recognizing the calm, I chose to do something that would be inclined to agitate the mind, which is my pattern, that moving towards unpleasant to try to get rid of it, to fix it. So in my experience, one of the most effective ways to cultivate or maintain wholesome states that have arisen is to turn towards them with mindfulness. Calm is arising. Recognize calm. Really allow yourself to recognize it. What is the experience of calm? Peace, joy, generosity, all of them. Allow yourself to take in that these beautiful qualities have arisen. Don't run away from them by busying yourself in some habitual pattern. Another helpful thing to do with, in terms of cultivating wholesome qualities of mind, is simply to recognize them. Actually, sometimes we don't recognize when wholesome qualities are present. We're engaging, particularly when we're looking at something challenging in our experience, if we are meeting a challenging state of mind, we're often so focused on that experience, the unpleasantness perhaps, or the contraction in the body, or the tightness, the tension that's around. We're focused on that aspect of our experience, and we're not actually recognizing that mindfulness is being cultivated. We're not recognizing that there's a sense of balance of mind that might be coming in. We're not recognizing that there might be an interest in exploring what's happening, or a sense of confidence in terms of meeting experience. Oh, I can actually meet this experience. All of these qualities of confidence, of an interest, of equanimity, of balance of mind, of calm, of tranquility, they kind of come along for the ride as we bring our mindful attention to our experience. And so to begin to recognize these qualities that are kind of coming along for the ride, to actually notice them. This is a way, they are there already, but we may not be quite conscious of them. So to turn, to recognize, oh, the interest that's present or the confidence that's present. So these four aspects of wise effort can really be seen as, you know, four sides of one process when we look at our experience through mindfulness. So, for example, if we take the exploration of a state of anger, what's happening in that process of bringing our mindfulness, of paying attention to the experience, letting go of the thoughts, kind of in the way I described before, that putting the mind into neutral. If we can just meet the experience of anger, then we're actually engaging in all four kinds of right effort simultaneously. It's like four sides of one process. So in that process of putting the mind into neutral, we are letting go, letting be of that unskillful state of mind. So that's the second kind of wise effort. We're engaged in that letting be, allowing it to let go of itself, essentially. The engagement with the putting your mind into neutral around that quality encourages the mind to not react further, thereby generating more anger. So we are, through this process of putting the mind in neutral, avoiding more unwholesome states that would arise if we had not put our mind in neutral. That's the first kind of wise effort, the avoiding unwholesome states that have not arisen. So we might be hanging out with anger, but in that hanging out, we are also not going spinning into a rage, which might be what happened if we were just caught in the anger and allowing our thoughts to spin. So those first two kinds of wise effort are, in effect, just bringing the mind to our experience, meeting our experience as it is. As we do this process, we are also simultaneously cultivating mindfulness. Mindfulness is there, and the moving our attention to that experience, being mindful of it, supports more mindfulness. So we are maintaining the mindful quality. That's the fourth kind of wise effort, maintaining wholesome states that have already arisen. And we are actively cultivating all of those qualities that come along for the ride. The interest, the confidence in our ability to be with experience, the balance of mind that happens when we do meet experience without reactivity. Concentration is being cultivated through sustaining the attention and not getting lost in thought. So all four sides of this wise effort are happening through this process. So we don't have to actually try to do wise effort so much as just meet our experience moment to moment. There are times when it's helpful to more direct our attention to one aspect of these four aspects of wise effort. If, for instance, we are interested in cultivating compassion, looking at things that support that, or perhaps we might find a particular pattern in our lives that we really need to look at. What are the causes that come into play here? How can I let go of these causes? How can I abandon this? So there are times when we need to look through the lens of one of these four wise efforts more than others. But the simple act of engaging in mindfulness is already bringing these four aspects of wise effort in. And the last thing I'll say before I open it up for discussion is coming back to this notion of effort leading to energy. I'd like to explore another way that this happens, or one of the ways that this happens. So in our minds, as they usually are, the way we normally engage, our habits and patterns are kind of running the show. You know, that we get hooked into our ways of reacting to experience. We're continually reacting. We want to have things that we like. We want to get rid of things we don't like. It's nonstop reactivity. And that reactivity actually consumes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of energy to be angry. It takes a lot of energy to try to make the world be the way we think we want it to be. That takes a tremendous amount of energy. And when we can actually let go of trying to construct the world in the way we think it should be, a tremendous amount of energy is freed up that then allows us to just be with what is, to engage in this practice of meeting our experience moment by moment. So we have some time if there's any Any thoughts or comments, questions, explorations?
Thank you. I really enjoyed hearing everything you had, a lot of what you had to say tonight. I do get stuck on one particular area that you were talking about, and that is not avoiding things out of aversion.
Mm-hmm.
I have in the past, I kind of have an older history of not having had the boundaries I needed, not being able to say no, and more recently, there's been the ending of a friendship. This was a couple years ago, and we still travel in the same circles. And I, without going into detail, I feel like this is a very destructive person for me to be around. And so I get really confused when I hear that topic, because for me, I feel like I do need to protect myself, and at the same time, I feel guilty with the spiritual aspect and have a lot of questions about, you know, is that okay for me to avoid this person? I think it is, and I'm going to do it anyway. But, you know, I have these questions that dog me.
Yeah, I understand your question exactly. You know, while we're engaging in this process, there are always going to be mixed motivations. So I hear in your description of this that there's a good deal of compassion for yourself in the avoidance. That this is not a skillful thing to do right now. So that there is some compassion in that. There could also be a sense of, I really hate that person. I can't be around that person. It's just like that person, you know, is poison for me. That's the more aversive reaction. So knowing that mixed motivations are going to exist as we engage in our world, in a situation like that, you know, I'd recommend that in the avoidance, I mean, the avoidance can be skillful, as long as it's mostly motivated out of a wholesome reason. So the compassion for yourself, can you connect with that as the main reason for the avoidance, as opposed to the hating of the person? So, you know, the loving of yourself, having that be the main motivation for the avoidance. And over time, you might find, you know, I had a very similar situation in my life. And I avoided the person for some time. And it was very similar. We were in very similar circles. We worked at the same company. And, you know, I would at times hear his voice when I was in my office. And I, you know, it was very difficult. But I just, you know, just avoided time with him, as you know, for a period of time. And after some period of time of working on my own too, because, you know, there's in this kind of situation, you're no doubt experiencing also memories that come up that trigger difficult emotions around this relationship. When those kinds of things come up, if you can, try not to avoid the feelings and explore with mindfulness the feelings of hurt, of resentment, of anger, of frustration, so that you're not avoiding those feelings. I mean, not to put yourself in the situation of being with the person, but, you know, memories will surface and those feelings will surface. And so that's how I worked through a lot of my anger, my resentment, my hostility towards this person, is through working with it over and over again, looking at it. Some of the things I talked about tonight, you know, sometimes I found that the emotions were too strong, and so it's like, okay, then, well, not now. I'm going to put my attention in my feet, and I'm just going to walk. So working with it with mindfulness as seems to be skillful. And that not now, that putting aside, that also has to be done without aversion. And for me, it was a clear recognition of, you know, right now, if I engage with being aware of this pattern of anger, it's just going to make me more angry because I'm not, the mindfulness isn't strong enough. So it was a sense of compassion, of putting that aside and turning my attention to something else. So that's the main piece, is to engage in the choices from as wholesome a place as possible. Does that speak?
Very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, Mary.
So this might not have to do with anybody else, but it's a really big one for me. I'm taking notes, I'll read them over, but little sounds really get to me. Not big sounds. And I don't know how to mindfully put it aside because it's still happening, or I don't know what you might suggest.
So little sounds like...
Scratching sounds, ticking sounds, little tiny things like thunder.
But repetitive.
Yeah.
Okay, so repetitive small sounds.
Yeah.
Okay, so something that doesn't go away.
Yeah, now I got to take notes.
Yeah, these can be challenging. I mean, you know, they can just rivet you. You know, it's like a ticking clock in a meditation hall is like, you know, just destined to drive 90% of the people nuts. It's not just you. It's really hard. And, you know, partly, you know, I had this experience at one point of, you know, hearing a ticking sound in a room, and it was in a meditation, and it's like all day long it was a ticking, and I was sure that it was this person that was sitting right near me, and she had a really loud watch on, and I listened to that, and I at some point I realized, you know, oh, this is the meditation today. Paying attention to that ticking is the meditation. And, you know, I went through all of these schemes in my mind. I thought of, like, taking off my watch and putting it out there, you know, try to hint to her, take off your watch, you know. So I saw all of this stuff going on. But I learned so much about aversion. I learned so much about what I discovered was that the problem was in my own mind. It wasn't actually in the ticking. The problem was in my reaction to the ticking. And by the end of the day, I was pretty balanced around it. So you really kind of have to kind of face it, you know, go into it. And then I'll tell you the next thing but something that happened within several weeks was that I was talking to someone, and someone mentioned, oh, you know, that person has an artificial heart valve. That ticking sound is what's keeping her alive. It like completely reoriented my my mind. I mean, it's like I had, you know, it's like there's no way she could stop. It was how she was living. So, you know, we also have to recognize or understand that things are not necessarily what we think they are. And it was a great lesson for me. Yeah. So we need to stop. So thank you all for your attention.